Where could it be? Some say it's submerged off the Greek island of Santorini, or maybe Malta. Others think it's in southern Spain, or buried by the desert in Morocco. The legend of Atlantis even inspired Donovan to write a catchy song that I liked as a kid. Hail Atlantis, way down below the ocean. Today, amateur explorers continue a search that started thousands of years ago around the Mediterranean, hoping for evidence that might turn out to be the lost city, or island, or continent of Atlantis. Mark Adams follows their leads and tells us what he found in his book, Meet Me in Atlantis. Mark, welcome back to Travel with Rick Steves.
Thanks for having me.
So, do you remember that Atlantis song by Donovan?
I do. I know I came across the lyrics many times while working on this book.
I bet you did. Some people search for Bigfoot and others are into UFOs and a lot of people are looking for Atlantis. If somebody actually discovered Atlantis, what would it look like?
Well, they would need to find two things. They would need to find an island that is sort of a circular shape, because the person who came up with the story of Atlantis, who was actually the philosopher Plato, arguably the greatest thinker in Western civilization, said it was a three-ringed city. And the second clue is it was located opposite the Pillars of Hercules. So you would have to find a three-ringed city opposite something that in antiquity, you know, before the birth of Christ, was known as the Pillars of Hercules.
Now, the Pillars of Hercules are the Rock of Gibraltar and then a similar rock on the other side in Morocco, isn't that right?
Well, you know, that's what I thought when I first started the book as well, but it turns out there are various Pillars of Hercules throughout the Mediterranean,
okay,
such as the Straits of Messina. There are some spots, you know, at the southern end of the Peloponnesus in Greece that were called the Pillars of Hercules at one time.
Okay.
But more or less, yes, the ones that mm-hmm. are between Spain and Morocco are the best known.
You mentioned Plato. Now, Plato was the Greek philosopher several centuries before Christ, and he's not a nut job. I mean, he was a very thoughtful guy, and he actually described this like he knew about it. What's the whole rationale for that? Did he just dream it up, or did he claim to actually know it?
That's the weird part that really sucked me into this story. You know, Plato writes The Republic, which is his most famous book. And then his next book is a book called The Timaeus. The Timaeus is his attempt to use mathematical logic to explain the cosmos. And keeping in mind, this is almost 2,000 years before the first telescope is invented. So he's riffing on this. And in between those two, he comes up with this story of Atlantis, part one. After the Timaeus, after he's talking about, you know, the harmony of the spheres and, you know, the divine craftsmen and all this stuff, he comes back to the story again in a second dialogue, and this time he gives all this information that, you know, it almost sounds like a travel guidebook. You know, he describes
so
the
he
island
it
and what
in
it's,
two different books.
Two different dialogues, yeah. He told it once, and then he came back to it again in the Timaeus and then in a dialogue called the Critias. You know, if he had just done it in the Timaeus, I think people would say, yeah, he made this up for, you know, whatever purpose or whatever.
But he had an agenda here. He wanted people to know about this.
Well, he definitely wanted people to think about it because, like I said, there is so much detail that, you know, it's almost like a treasure map. You can't help but start to think about, well, where could this have been? And because Plato is sort of an obscure writer, you have to decode it. He doesn't just come out and say things. He kind of hints at them.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, either it's real and he had a legitimate agenda or he was just playing a prank on us and he's still laughing at us 2,500 years later.
Or maybe it's somewhere in between. He had a famous statement in, I think it was The Republic, where he said, you know, there are things that are true and there are things that are not true, but there are also things that are true and untrue.
When we look at the famous picture of, what is it, Plato and Aristotle in the School of Athens by Raphael at the Vatican, Plato's holding a book. Is that the Timaeus?
He's holding the Timaeus, exactly. In the Middle Ages and shortly thereafter in the Renaissance, that was his most famous work. You know, because it was so influential on things like, you know, early Christian thought.
So anybody who's been to the Vatican to see the Raphael rooms, they've looked at Plato holding the Timaeus, and in there he describes Atlantis. So this is kind of a treasure hunt for the ages, and Plato gave us some clues, and smart people have been searching for this for centuries, literally.
Yep.
And your book lays out the four likely locations: Agadir, which is near the Atlantic coast in Morocco; Malta, which has got a lot of ancient history and vanished population and all that sort of thing; Santorini, which is the lip of a crater from a volcano, which is very thought-provoking; and southern Spain. Let's talk about each one of these just a little bit, why they would be a possible location for Atlantis. First, let's go down to Agadir, which isn't that a resort now on the Atlantic coast in Morocco?
Yeah, Agadir itself is a resort very popular with French tourists. The old city was, in fact, destroyed in an earthquake and flood, sort of the same language that Plato used, in 1960. So it's all brand new, you know, downtown, sort of a conch-shaped beach there. The reason why Agadir is a possibility is because it is outside the Pillars of Hercules if you put them at the Strait of Gibraltar. It does have that history of being destroyed by earthquakes and floods. And there are certain geological structures in the area that have that sort of ring shape that I mentioned earlier.
Those three rings, concentric rings, that would be sort of the universal symbol of Atlantis, wouldn't it?
That's sort of like the number one thing that an archaeologist would be looking for.
So if you stumble onto that, you're getting warmer.
Right. Which is why people tend to focus on Santorini in Greece, because it has that sort of unique circular bowl shape, because it was a volcano that around 1600 BC blew sky high. I think it's the biggest known eruption, not in recorded history, but that we have evidence for, you know, pottery shards for and that sort of thing. And, you know, because it was so close to both Egypt and what I guess at that time was the Mycenaean Empire of Greece. There is thinking that Plato mentions that one of his ancestors went to Egypt, may have gotten this story from one of the temples down there. There's thinking that perhaps this explosion was so big that the Egyptians saw it and there may have been refugees from Santorini, and this was all brought together and put into this, some sort of oral history that was passed down to Plato.
Ah, some sort of an amazing city that once existed and no longer was there.
Exactly.
The explosion that left Santorini just the lip of a crater in the Mediterranean, don't they think that was the, it could have wiped out the Minoan civilization on nearby Crete?
Yeah, it would be the same thing.
And then on Santorini, we've discovered this Akrotiri, this wonderful ancient ruined site that dates back to that second millennium BC, doesn't it?
And the discovery of Akrotiri, which is phenomenal, and they've only uncovered like 3% of it, I believe. I met the head of archaeology down there and I said, what do you expect to find in your lifetime? And he's like, you know, I've been digging here for 50 years. My theories could all be disproven the day after I die because there's so much here we just don't know. And that was actually found because a guy named Mavor from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute went to Santorini and started getting people together saying, hey, you know, there are all these clues for Atlantis. There's Plato and there's another fellow in Athens named Galanopoulos. And they sort of started pushing. And this famous Greek archaeologist named Marinatos came in and said, well, let's just, you know, start digging and see what we find. And they found Akrotiri. I think the ash from the volcano was like 50 feet deep or something. And they found a small passageway that led down into a room with all the walls were frescoes. So it was just one of the great discoveries of the 20th century.
One way or another, whether you're looking for Atlantis or not, when you're in Santorini, you should be looking for Akrotiri. It's really great. Mark Adams is the author of Meet Me in Atlantis, in which he tracks down clues left by Plato and a bevy of obsessive amateur investigators. Mark also writes about an eye-opening 3,000-mile trip along the Alaska Marine Highway in Tip of the Iceberg. His other titles include Mr. America and Turn Right at Machu Picchu. His website is markadamsbooks.com. Okay, so Mark, we got Santorini, we got Agadir in Morocco. And by the way, when you think of those Pillars of Hercules, in the ancient mindset, the Mediterranean was the center of the world, really. And then you got to the Rock of Gibraltar, and from there you can see Morocco on the other side from Gibraltar. And then that was sort of the end of the known world. And anybody who goes beyond here, what was it? Dragons, beware the dragons are out there.
Nec plus ultra was supposedly written on a rock at the Rock of Gibraltar, yeah. None further beyond.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. What about Malta? Because Malta has all sorts of mystique about vanished population and ancient ruins.
Well, Malta, you know, if you've been to Malta, you know that it is this sort of weird, mysterious place. It's a fortress, an island fortress that was built by the Knights of Malta, sort of a, you know, mysterious group that goes back to the, you know, 16th century as sort of the guard for the Pope and had this private army on this island. And it also has these temples that go back, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 years. You know, these extraordinary buildings that are, it's like Stonehenge, but it underwent cell division. You know, so it's like Stonehenge times 4, Stonehenge times 6. And like Stonehenge, they line up with the solstices and light shoots down passages and does crazy things like that. And this goes, you know, way back. It's the earliest known civilization in the Mediterranean, I believe.
And that's amazing because this is a little island halfway between Sicily and Africa, right?
Right. A very small island. And at least once in antiquity, the entire island was wiped out, quite likely by some sort of earthquake and flood. So that would line up.
Earthquake and flood.
That would line up with Plato's story, exactly.
Okay, so Agadir, I can buy Agadir. I could go to Santorini and think about Atlantis, and I could also be fascinated by the connections with Malta. I don't get the southern Spain connection because it's not an island. And why is southern Spain in the running for the location of Atlantis?
The interesting thing is the word Plato uses for island is Nisos, like Peloponnesos. It doesn't necessarily mean an island completely surrounded by water. It could mean like a peninsula. It could mean a piece of land that is mostly surrounded by water. Southern Spain, in an area called Doñana National Park, which is famous for bird watching, it floods half the year, so the birds come in there on their migration to Africa. It's quite beautiful. But it's filled with silt from the Guadalquivir River. Under that silt, it's generally believed there may be a lost city called Tartessus, which is mentioned by Aristotle. It's mentioned maybe in the Bible under a different name. Historians generally think that Tartessus exists, and that is the best location for it. Now, if Tartessus turns out to be the inspiration for Atlantis, if Atlantis is just Tartessus under another name, that would be the place. And I think that is, if not the most likely spot, it's certainly there's none better.
I think when we consider all of this, it's really important to remember that from a 21st century perspective, it's hard for us to adequately appreciate how advanced civilizations were 1,500 years before Christ. I mean, there was a lot going on that we just can't hardly fathom.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of it is underwater now because the water levels have continued to rise over the years. And, you know, a lot of it we don't understand. It's like, you know, trying to look into a different dimension.
In your book, Mark, I thought it was funny when you mentioned anyone with a .edu email barely returns your questions because there's so many nut jobs looking for Atlantis. Did you gain any respect for these people that are dedicating so much energy to finding this city? And
I did. You know, and, you know, a lot of these people, I did talk to some just flat out kooks, right. But you know, the people I spoke to were just, you know, dedicated amateurs who really were interested in this, did all the reading, were skeptical. And eventually I did get some, you know, real experts to talk to me, you know, the people who were genuinely interested in, you know, finding out the truth. And, you know, secretly off the record, you know, they're as interested as anybody else.
Right.
You know,
but
they can't come out and say it because they can't come out of the closet. Exactly. They'll lose their government funding if they come out and start talking about Atlantis. You know, but you get a couple of drinks into them and they're like,
that's the trick. Get an archaeologist drunk and then you can talk about it.
Exactly.
And a century ago, there was this sort of passion, this mania for lost great cities. You had Troy, yeah. Gnosis, Chichen Itza, the
Absolutely.
Valley of the Kings and Luxor, El Dorado, Machu Picchu, you name it. So it does have a romantic allure to an archaeologist, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody found Atlantis, I think the chances are slim that it's going to turn up in a form that could be recognized. But if they did find it, that would be the greatest archaeological discovery of all time.
That would be exciting. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm talking with Mark Adams, and his book is Meet Me in Atlantis. Mark, it's fascinating to me that the only real hard evidence we have of this is the Greek philosopher Plato writing a little bit about it in two different books. Is that what all these Atlantologists are going by, is simply the writings of Plato, or is there any other ancient evidence?
You know, there isn't much ancient evidence, which is why archaeologists tend to center on the idea that Santorini may have inspired Atlantis, because there's actual pottery there, there's actual geological evidence there. You know, everything else is speculation based on, you know, ancient oral histories that were eventually written down and things like that. Anyone who writes about Atlantis, and there are all kinds of crazy ideas out there and half-crazy ideas, it's all traced back to Plato. Plato is the only original source for any talk about Atlantis. Hmm. You know, you mentioned the Donovan song. The lyrics to that song, which are kind of weird and mm-hmm. spacey, they all come out of a book written by a Minnesota congressman in the 1880s named Ignatius Donnelly, who sort of cherry-picked ancient history and, you know, weird pseudoscience theories and put together this 500-page book called Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. And that's the book that gives us the idea that Atlantis was an island on the bottom of the ocean. Plato never says that, but Donnelly decided that the Azores were the tops of the mountains that had been the island of Atlantis. How he got that idea, I'm not sure.
Now, there is a guy you write about named Tony O'Connell, who's the founder of Atlantipedia.
Yes. Tony is, you know, that rare, wonderful thing that you come across as a writer, which is the dedicated amateur expert.
Now, his Atlantipedia, is that like Wikipedia for people looking for Atlantis?
It's kind of like that. It's online. It's atlantipedia.ie. And it's got thousands of entries, anything that's ever been connected to Atlantis, from the craziest conspiracy UFO theory to like the most serious textual analysis of Plato in Greek, you will find on Tony's Atlantipedia.
You know, these guys are just regurgitating the same little tiny scraps of evidence to see what they can come up with. And it seems part of your quest is to follow their quest as well as to look for Atlantis.
Well, it was. I mean, the interesting question you always ask these people is why? Why are you looking for Atlantis? You know, because a lot of them devote a good chunk of their lives to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only answer I could come up with was because I want to be the one to solve the mystery.
Oh, it's like finding the source of the Nile or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just I want to be the one. I want to have that feather in my cap, you know. And it's always some weird thing in their childhood that snags them, you know. I went and talked to this physicist in Germany named Rainer Kühne, who wrote a paper for the archaeological magazine Antiquity, which is, you know, one of the most respected. And I asked him, I said, you know, Rainer, where did you get the idea to start looking into Atlantis? And he goes over to the wall and he says, I have it right here. And I thought he was going to pull down some sort of physics journal. And he pulls something down and it's a copy of Scrooge McDuck Goes to Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. Great. I flew all the way here for this.
I'm in the middle of Braunschweig, Germany, because you found a copy of Scrooge McDuck Goes to Atlantis. But it's always some weird little thing like that that sets people off.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Mark Adams. His book is Meet Me in Atlantis. Mark, you can wonder where is Atlantis and so on, but of the four places we talked about, just from a travel point of view, which one did you enjoy most just to be at? Agadir, Malta, Santorini, or the south of Spain?
You know, they're all very nice. I have to say, as a place to just visit and relax, and if you could do it in a little bit shoulder season, off season, Santorini is just, you know, mind-bogglingly beautiful.
And it's mobbed with cruise ship travelers in the day, but early and late in the day, it's just so peaceful. That sunset from the top of the crater when all the cruise ships are sailing away.
And those blue roofs in Ia down at the end of the island, it's just, you know, if you can get there at a time when it's not so crowded, it is just spectacular.
And then when the sun's just right after four glasses of ouzo, if you squint your eyes just right, hail Atlantis. All right, Mark Adams, thanks so much, and fascinating work. Meet me in Atlantis.
Thanks for having me.
Hail Atlantis.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kasmara Hall, and Donna Bardsley. We get website support from Andrew Wakeling, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Read what Rick's been thinking about lately on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find out more about our guests each week on our website at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll look for you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.